Tim Williams in the punt. Averaging just under 38 on 44 kicks this year. Nice high kick, got a little wind under it. And it runs Howard back over, but it's a little, look at that. Oh my goodness. One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman.
Welcome to the MGO Bug Podcast. Obviously, Keith Jackson passed away on Saturday. Shit, man.
Yeah.
Gotta get composed here.
Yeah.
It's taking a long time, in which we're not actually saying anything.
It's appropriate given Keith Jackson's masterful use of space in his commenting.
Yeah, except I'm just like, oh, I can't say anything. I'll sound like a person who is about to weep. But that's what I think Keith Jackson does for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And kind of reminds me when Johnny Cash died. And everybody was like, oh, that was a good dude. Except for Notre Dame fans. Because for some reason, Notre Dame fans were convinced that Keith Jackson had it out for them. And that was the 34th best thing about Keith Jackson. And the rest of it was he could go anywhere in the country and convince you that place was important.
Yeah. And had a way of capturing that place where I don't know how he did it, but when he went to a place like Michigan, or as we'll get to, the place like Pullman, he manages to capture the spirit of the place, even though, you know, he couldn't have spent that much time there.
Well, he was a Washington State alum.
That's, yeah.
So Pullman is kind of a...
Pullman's different, but yeah, but I mean, you know, to come to Ann Arbor, I mean, you know, this is a guy with a Southern drawl, you know...
Who went to Washington State.
He went to Washington State, but he comes to Ann Arbor, and, you know, he sounds out of place in terms of, you know, at least what you expect to hear from somebody in Ann Arbor. And yet, you know, you hear his introductions to Michigan games. There was something that a longtime Michigan Athletic Department staffer, Barb Kosman, posted on Twitter yesterday that something Keith Jackson wrote, I think for one of Michigan's programs. Before a Michigan-Ohio State game some year or something like that. And his ability to just perfectly capture why Michigan football means something to so many people, why Michigan Stadium means something to so many people, why the atmosphere of the game, nobody else has been able to capture it the way he did. And, I mean, I know for me, like, you know, he calls the Charles Woodson punt return of the 1997 game, and I was in the stadium for that game. I was a kid at that game, but my memory of that return is not me being in that stadium watching that play. It is the ABC angle and Keith Jackson's call of it, because he is the one who made that memory indelible.
Well, why don't we listen to that? At this juncture.
And once again, Michigan should come out of this with very good field position. Well, as we've noted already, Bartholomew is special.
In a field position game, a good punter like Bartholomew is priceless.
Snap is low, but he gets it out all right. Oh my goodness, look at this. He runs Woodson all the way back to the 22-yard line. Woodson's got one block. And another block. One more. Touchdown. No flag.
I mean, the way he's, like, dancing back and forth with the crowd there is something that I just find incredible, that it almost felt like the crowd was roaring back at him as he was calling every cut.
I mean, we mentioned this when we were talking about, we had a top five.
Yeah, I know this is your favorite call.
It does have a lot to do with the crowd on that audio, because, you know, they roar and he fills in the interstices. And then he tells you at the end, no flags, which is the first thing I want to know.
Yes. just please tell me, for the love of God.
I mean, I was watching the Minnesota hockey game, and I was a little bit annoyed with the play-by-play guy because there were a couple of details that were going on in the game. Like, Michigan would take a penalty or they'd have a goal waved off, and the guy wouldn't be immediately on top of it.
Yeah.
He was, as a play-by-play guy, your main job is to get all the information to the viewer as fast as possible, and he was excellent at that, along with being the voice of college football. Can we get that Washington State intro? Because I think it's. I mean, we hear the things that he says about Michigan, but we. I think it's good to think about how Keith Jackson impacted everybody's view, approach to the whole of college football, where it's a symphony of teams you love and hate, and Keith Jackson is the love section of all of it.
Yeah.
When one is making a first trip into the Palouse country, it might be easy to ask out loud, where is everybody? Especially if you come from an urban region, and out here in the rolling wheatland, it's different. The air's sweet, you can hear the bird song, and the natural process includes all four seasons with gusto. You find Washington State University on a collection of hills adjacent to the town of Pullman, and in the eyes of an old alumnus, it is still a happy find for one who came from afar and who stayed long enough to have a life shaped. And once in a while, the WSU Cougars sit on top of the Pac-10 conference football standings in November.
And now you feel something about Washington State.
Yeah. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, I have some feelings about Washington State, mostly pirate-related feelings, but he was able to bring a sense of the place to some extent. Wherever Keith Jackson was a Rose Bowl. And it sucks that we lost him, but he'd been retired for a million years, 20, from the Michigan fans' perspective, because he came back after his 98 retirement, but only on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I still remember he did a tour of college football to collect all the accolades, not to collect. He was just retiring, so everybody threw accolades at him. And he came to Michigan, and they gave him a microphone and he spoke to the crowd. And I still remember him saying, like, this was his place. And that used to be the greatest thing about Keith Jackson when I was younger, is that this guy had been to all of college football, and he decided that Michigan was the place.
Despite not having a direct tie-in here either.
Right, yeah. He's, Southern guy, went to Washington State, came upon it completely naturally. It was a very validating thing. And now, I'm older, not as, pretend I'm not as provincial. and now I feel like Keith Jackson is able to make every place seem like Michigan.
Yeah, there was a certain gravity to what he said where, every game felt big. It felt like an event. And I also think one of the remarkable things about him is despite how incredibly gifted he was as an announcer, he was also someone who was easily imitated by people. And so you'd get, like, one of my best friends does a pretty darn spot on Keith Jackson impression. And every time we'd play the NCAA video game growing up, he'd be saying all the names in the Keith Jackson voice. And it added a lot to it. Like, it really did. It was like, it made it feel fun and more important than listening to whatever pre-programmed announcing they had in that game.
He used power.
And also, there's, a great deal of joy in just listening to him, fire up and call an SEC game and just listen to him ring off the names of the guys on defense or whatever. And like, that was music, man. And
well, he was deeply funny, which is not a play-by-play thing that you often get.
No.
So the end of that Washington State thing is kind of a mastery of self-effacing understatement. Every once in a while, Washington State is on top of the Pac-10 standings in November. And, you know, classic examples abound, like the Brian Griese scramble.
Yes.
Whereas, like, the last time he ran that fast, his daddy was chasing him with a stick.
While his dad is standing next to him in the announcing booth.
And as Michigan fans, that season having Keith Jackson and Bob Griese.
It felt like it was on every game, too. Like,
yeah, they
it really was.
And they got to cover Brian. And one of the things I always remember is the end of the 1998 Rose Bowl.
Yes. The space that Keith Jackson gave Bob Griese.
It's a great college football game to watch. The trophy presentation is coming up. The MVP in today's ball game. You want to know who it is? I'm standing alongside his proud daddy, quarterback Brian Griese of Michigan. What a year he's had. Changed his whole life. I don't blame you. You want to cry, you go ahead. I'll hold you. That's Shea Greasy. You guys got me crying.
So having, you know, that dynamic between Keith Jackson and Brian Griese and Bob Griese really added a lot to the greatest Michigan season in my lifetime. Probably everyone who's listening to this podcast, unless Craig Ross is. Hi, Craig. And I can't overstate how much Keith Jackson meant to Michigan football in particular, you know, kind of above and beyond his impact on college football, which is, I think, the main reason that Notre Dame fans of the ND Nation variety just hated him. Which was great.
Yes. And still only the 34th best thing about Keith Jackson.
Yeah. And, I mean, you mentioned that he could write. And listening to the Washington State intro, you hear so many of these, and often they're overwritten. They're maudlin. I have some problems with a lot of the stuff that Michigan is doing right now because they just go right to the Hallmark Channel version of whatever the intro is going to be.
Yeah, they just kind of say it out loud.
Well, I mean,
there's no subtlety to it, right?
Right. Yeah. There's no artifice. It's just, you know, hammering on the things that anybody would do. There's nothing unique about it. I think Keith Jackson, as a writer of these things, was outperforming everybody in his field. He was lapping them.
Oh, I imagine if he wanted to, he would have been one hell of a sports writer.
Yeah, but thank God
that he didn't do that. Yeah.
And, you know, to close out this segment so we can move on and I can actually, like, speak instead of trying to speak and failing to speak, we're going to listen to the 2003 Ohio State-Michigan intro, which I think highlights all the things we've been talking about.
When the last glow drifts away from the big house at Michigan, it's a good time to have a seat and listen. Here, Yost, Kipke, Kwessler. And in your mind's eye, see the lads who wore the colors. Harmon, who played both ways all the way to a Heisman Trophy and got a standing ovation once at the Horseshoe. And Archie Griffin, the double Heisman man from Ohio State, who had his moments. So many to remember, players and coaches. But there are two coaches who had a special place in this history, Woody and Bo. The salt and pepper of the series. Giants in their profession, their histrionics, legendary. And they could win. This is a remarkable festival annually, whether here or at the Horseshoe. There the great bands fight that team across the field. Show them Ohio's here. Hail to the victors valiant. Hail to the conquering heroes. Today, another bounty of memories, concluding 100 years of Buckeyes and Wolverines.
Rest in peace, Keith.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage, and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9!
Colby, what about you?
7!
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome. This is one of those games that matters mightily in college football, especially since it is on the second Saturday in November. And these are elements that will be impacted by what happens here today. They include the Big Ten Conference Championship, the Rose Bowl, a possible invitation to an Alliance Bowl, the National Championship, and the Heisman Trophy. Now, if that doesn't whet your appetite, you're watching the wrong channel.
All right, now for something that made me unreasonably angry and then happy instead of weepy. Michigan beats Michigan State at Breslin 82-72 in a game that was a TV Teddy special, especially in the first half.
And what's crazy is he may have actually been the best of the three officials in this game, and that I'm not saying he had a good one.
Boy, howdy.
But 51 fouls, man. That means everyone's doing way too much.
Well, I mean, part of that is like a Michigan State, when they lose it to Michigan and Breslin, Izzo won't let it go. So the last 2 minutes of this game.
Excruciating.
Well, excruciating in one way.
In a joyful way.
So, I don't know.
I do like that he dragged that out. It did make like downloading the video of the game take a lot longer than normal.
Well, I mean, so if X was like a 70% three-point shooter, it would have been all joy. But he misses like four in a row there, and they get a bucket. I think they cut it to six after the first attempt. And so it's kind
it
of a combination.
Just close enough to justify them continuing to foul.
Right. But not really.
Not by the end.
Like when they're fouling with like 26 seconds left down 10, like how many buckets do you think you can get in 26 seconds? So it was, at that point, it's just Izzo eating his own liver on national television. And that was
fun.
Mm,
delicious.
Kisses fingers dot JPEG meme.
Yes.
what a win for this team. And, you know, the key moment to me was the first time Wagner gets hit on that pick and pop, and he rises up from three, mm-hmm. and he cans it. And to me, like, if that doesn't happen, if Wagner is still kind of scuffling, this is another grim Breslin defeat.
Yes, and I think if we're thinking about the same play here, I can't remember whether there was a Wagner three before that, but I think that was the first one. It came right after a couple Michigan State buckets in the paint where it felt like that could be the way that they could start to pull away potentially. I mean, it felt like the momentum was swinging in their direction. I know momentum's a stupid thing, but in Breslin, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
We've seen games get away from Michigan early where it feels like it started to swing on a few possessions. And for Wagner to come back down the court after getting worked a little bit on defense and just put one right through like that, I mean, obviously set the tone for him scoring 27 points in 27 minutes in this game. That's a good 27 for 27.
A little bit better.
I like that one. So, I mean, that was... I don't know whether Beilein was playing a little bit of rope-a-dope with the things he was saying about Wagner heading into this game, where he's like, well, you know, I'm not sure how he's feeling.
Doesn't really seem like a rope-a-doper.
I mean, I don't think he is either, but like, I wasn't expecting Wagner to be that good in this game. And he not only was the offensive catalyst and the biggest reason that Michigan won this game, he took out Nick Ward, basically. I mean, Izzo played a little bit of part of that too, but
he had a lot of foul trouble.
Nick Ward plays 14 minutes in this game, and and for a lot of that, he only has three fouls.
And one of them is a beautiful, beautiful minute.
Oh my goodness! I mean, the jelly ankles. He just went down.
Oh,
it was so good. That's right up there with the Trey Burke picking Keith Appling's pocket at half court in terms of just like, we had a rivalry here, and somebody has just definitively won it.
Oh, God. This is what the column is going to be about, but there's people leave for the NFL or the NBA, and some of them, I'm at peace with it, because I feel like I've gotten, like, the maximum experience I can from them, like Burke and Woodson, and the other guys leave, and you're like, but I really needed to see you, like...
Yeah, like we could have had a little bit more there.
Yeah, we could have had like a fully operational Death Star version of you. And yeah, seen like
I don't blame Jabril Peppers whatsoever for going pro, but at the same time, his career at Michigan didn't necessarily feel complete.
Exactly. And I mean, go if you need to go, do what you need to do, but I always feel like a little bit of regret that I didn't get to see like the maximum version of this player.
Sure.
Mo Wagner can go to the NBA.
Yeah.
I am completely at peace with whatever Mo Wagner wants to do after
like
this season.
There was a part of me that felt that after the Louisville game last year, and then the Oregon game happened, and it was like, you know what? There may be something unfinished here.
Yeah.
And now that Nick Ward hit the deck, and we're going to get to replay that for years and years and years. Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
I'm at peace with whatever decision he makes after this season. He can come back. That'd be fine.
Yeah, I would love it if he comes back. But if he goes pro, man, like he's gone out on a hell of a high note.
But back to that first three-pointer. So he hits a couple of those, and now the center has to hug up on him.
Yes.
And it's difficult to play Nick Ward because he can't check Wagner. And you saw that kind of moment in the middle of the game where the middle of the first half where Jaren Jackson is just going off.
Yes. He had a terrifying stretch in there.
He had like 2 minutes where it was just like, oh my God, we're going to lose this game by 50.
Like chase down blocks, the dunk.
Yeah.
Oh God, the dunk.
Which wasn't even like the most lethal dunk that Michigan State had, but the shilling
that's
one.
That's the shilling one. Isaiah Livers is going to, oof. Welcome to the Big Ten, kid.
Yeah.
In the starting lineup. It's a fun place.
But so at that point, then you get a matchup where Xavier Simpson cannot be checked by Cassius Winston.
Yes, because Winston is not the best on-ball defender against the drive, and usually that does not matter one bit because you've got Ward and Jackson lurking in the paint.
Yeah.
But with Michigan's ability to go five out and actually really threatened that to the point that they had to respect that. You're getting Xavier Simpson layups with the, you know, against
several.
Michigan State. And Michigan State gives up, you know, teams shoot about 35% from two against them and get about 20% of their shots blocked.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan doesn't have a stellar outing in this regard, but they get up to 43% on twos.
And what would have the number been if they had converted those like two early, like kind of fast break.
Yeah, they missed some bunnies early, so they got, would have like, been up to
offensive rebounds on those. So they like five of those misses were not Michigan State defense, but just Michigan missing bunnies in the first minute.
Yeah. So not only does Michigan shoot 18 for 42 on twos, so 43%, they pulled down 31% of their, they pulled down 11 offensive rebounds. They out rebound Michigan State in Breslin against this front line, which is, it's still blowing my mind, to be perfectly honest. But so that helps a lot with the, so that even adds to that 2-point number a little bit in terms of the impact of it, because you're recovering some of those misses, a number of those misses. And
and
Michigan State comes up with 8 blocks, 6 of them by Jackson, but that's actually below their average. Yeah. And Nick Ward doesn't get any. I mean, it was really as long as Jaren Jackson wasn't coming from the weak side, there were openings there, and for Michigan to be able to crack the interior of this defense is such a promising thing for the rest of this season too, because this game I really thought was just about the worst possible matchup for them.
Turns out not so much.
It's not, because of how far Xavier Simpson has come, especially, and Isaiah Livers has come.
Well, and the fact that Michigan can play five out.
Yes.
I think
the five out part of it, I mean, it's, you know, it is by no means a coincidence that even though he ends up fouling out of this game, Wagner plays 27 minutes to Teske's 8.
Yeah.
Even though that has quite justifiably been a much closer split in minutes for most of the season.
Well, if he's
this was on. A game. Yeah, I mean, if Wagner's on, then he's the man, but there are going to be other matchups where Teske is going to play a much bigger role because of just how the matchups play out. But this was a game where Michigan absolutely 100% needed Wagner to have the game that he had. And he did it.
And then on the other side of the ball, a complete defensive performance.
Well, one of the best. I mean, I know the points per possession number comes out at a shade over one. It's not statistically one of the best defensive performances of the Beilein's Michigan tenure, but watching that game, hell yeah, it was.
Yeah, because, I mean, I tweeted about Jordan Poole getting lost on a back cut and Bridges got a dunk, and that's almost the only easy bucket I can remember them getting.
Yeah, no, that was incredibly notable, because it was kind of shocking that it happened.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get into the flow of this game and Michigan's making everything difficult. And then they get a back cut, and it's like, oh, wow, I forgot that can happen.
Yeah, like it.
And sure as heck wasn't forgetting about that in some previous years. I was very aware of that possibility. So, and you know, they, even the young guys, I thought Poole generally played okay. I mean, he only gets 7 minutes in this game because Michigan leans very hard on Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman and Charles Matthews, who I thought both played tremendous all-around
stellar
games.
Defensive games, yeah.
You know,
Matthews kind of struggled on offense.
Matthews struggled on offense, but he was taking the shots that Michigan needed to take to keep Michigan State's defense honest.
Yeah, and he had a couple of Kobe assists on those.
Absolutely, on those drives misses, to the hoop. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's setting up a couple of those, like, Teske offensive rebounds and stuff where Michigan needed a couple guys who were willing to just kind of go kamikaze at the rim, because you have to keep that threat up against Michigan State. And it's not going to be the most efficient way to score, but you got to do it. So those guys didn't have the most efficient games from the field, but they drew a decent number of fouls. They converted from the line. And like you said, they played stellar defense. And
also,
Simpson was up in Winston's shirt, forcing four turnovers.
They had three-point attempts in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, they did. What makes Michigan State so damn hard to guard is they have an unstoppable post force, a couple guys who can really take the ball off the dribble, and you can't help on those guys because everybody on the outside is a really good shooter. And Michigan just didn't give those guys space, and their post guys held up enough. I mean, Nick Ward only gets 4 points in this game. Jackson gets 19, but that is something you can absolutely deal with, especially since most of it's coming at the line. They made him earn it. And State goes 3 for 12 on threes in this game. You know, Michigan's able to, even in a game where Michigan only hits 6 threes in this game, and still gets a +9 point advantage from the 3-point arc.
Yeah, and so Michigan State, how many of those threes that they got up were just desperation in the last 2 minutes? Probably a couple of them. So we're talking about, you know, 9, 10 3-point, attempts in a whole basketball game.
Yeah.
And that, I mean,
it's the biggest difference between Michigan's defense from all of Beeline before to the last 2 years. And it really started clicking, obviously, over the second half of last season. And now, I mean, the transition from Donlin to Luke Jakilic has been pretty darn seamless.
Yeah.
And if anything, they seem to be getting better.
Well, going after a couple of guys who made Illinois State the team that obviously was a really good mid-major that should not have been left out of the NCAA tournament was a good idea. Because those guys are able to take mid-major athletes and construct a really good defense out of them. Well, let's pair that with John Beeline and see what happens.
Yeah, and it also should be mentioned that this is probably Beeline's... It's not his most NBA talented team yet. It's not his most talented team,
It's probably his most athletic team.
Yeah, I think in terms of the defensive upside, it's the one that is best pieced together, and that's even with Wagner and Robinson being in the rotation. But, I mean, especially now with Isaiah Livers in the starting lineup, and Simpson really taking control of the point guard position. You've got an impact perimeter defender, and when Teske comes in, you've got an impact rim protector, and that's something Michigan has not had.
Since we're talking about defense, we do need to shout out one Duncan Robinson.
Yes.
Who got matched up.
That was a nightmare matchup.
Jared Jackson.
Could not have been a worse matchup.
It went fine.
He battled his ass off, and Jackson, you know, Jackson gets him.
Trying to post up from 18 feet.
But it, one of the things, I mean, you mentioned this during the game, State started trying to go to that so much that it kind of bogged down their offense a little bit because they were really trying to force it through that matchup. And Robinson treads water enough that works out just fine for Michigan. And then he comes down, cans his only 3-point attempt from the corner. He comes out on the positive side of the ledger in 18 minutes, and I'm sure they weren't really necessarily planning to play him 18 minutes in this game.
Well, so,
I mean, it definitely helps up Ward's out so that sometimes you get to match him up against Goins or whoever, but I mean, that's still, that was more than they expected to play him, and they got positive contributions from him.
I mean, he's able to deny the entry pass. He's able to deny post position against a guy who's super athletic, but he's not a load. You know, he's one of those lanky Mo Bamba types.
Yeah, I mean, he's still very much growing into his frame.
Right.
So he doesn't have a necessarily refined post game yet. And Robinson's a smart player.
Yeah.
So he did a good job of denying post position and using his senior tricks to at least make Jackson work hard.
Well, and then you've got, you know, 10 or 15 seconds of a possession that are just a failed attempt to get an entry pass.
Yeah, the cat and mouse game of just trying to get the ball into the post, and that's... That can turn into a rough possession if all of a sudden you got to figure out something else to do.
Yeah. So shout out to Duncan Robinson and his defense.
Yes.
Take a picture.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a key factor because Michigan was in a lot of foul trouble. So Isaiah Livers gets his third foul early in the second half. He gets a fourth on a nonsense call. And now that you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes, that was a nonsense call. I thought you were referring to the third foul that he had when he misread how the officials were calling the game. Let's put it that way, because it was a little ticky tack. But when you're trying to jump out and prevent a post entry that 18 feet away from the basket, it's unnecessary.
The first foul on Wagner was a really bad sign.
Yes,
because you know Nick Ward's trying to post up and he just falls over.
Yeah,
and Wagner's looking at him and like. Maybe you can call that a foul. I like maybe his bump of Ward was inappropriate in some way, but you really can't call that a foul.
Well, especially since once you do that, officials become kind of married to the way that they started out calling the game. And so that started, they had to even it out and keep evening it out. And that's how you get, I'm going to count it up here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9... 10, 11 different players with at least 3 fouls in this game.
And I, you know, evening it out is generous. Because Michigan,
that's true. Michigan the fouls had, evened out at the end when Michigan State was just tacking, obviously, to put Michigan on the free throw line
so
intentionally.
So 16 of their free throws were intentional.
Yeah.
So the end of that
there's a gap here.
Yeah, there's, and it's just like, I get very, very frustrated because every game at Breslin is like this. Many games against Michigan State, no matter where they are like this.
Yeah, and part of it is because Michigan State tends to play a style of basketball that draws more fouls than Michigan does. But,
sort of.
But that does not cover the entire
Remember
game.
That Big Ten tournament game where both...
Where Max Bielfeldt's in there in the first half at center?
In the first 4 minutes. Yeah. Because both Horford and Morgan had two fouls on them.
I mean, this... I would be lying if I said I did that game did not come to mind.
Michigan like, State was
within
in the bonus,
a minute of this game starting.
5 minutes into the first half. Mm-hmm. Both teams were in the bonus 5 minutes into the second half.
Yes. I mean, it was a horribly called basketball game. There were bad calls on both sides. I would say there were more bad calls that went in Michigan State's favor, but it was... I mean, the teams really had to overcome a lot to make this a great basketball game. And it was a great basketball game, and it could have been an incredible basketball game if the refs would just get out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, you watch Michigan play Purdue, and the refs mostly get out of the way until real late. And,
yeah, you know, and that, a bit of a thing there.
And that was – I don't feel like the Michigan State game was necessarily any more physical.
No, I mean, that was the thing. It's not like guys were slamming bodies in the – it was not some like – we need to get this game under control so that somebody doesn't get hurt type of game. And that is the only time you should be calling this many fouls.
Well, and, you know, it drives me crazy. Like, one of the Livers fouls where he's, like, mirroring a guy as he tries to drive to the bucket, does a pretty good job of it. The guy puts up kind of a weak shot, and Livers gets hit with a foul call.
You're just bailing the guy out at that point.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And like, man, you can't do that. You can't just be like, oh, I guess their hips touched a little bit. Like, there's the kind of body contact that really knocks a guy off. I think Matthews went to the line once because someone undercut him pretty badly.
Yeah.
You got to call that, but like that incidental kind of glancing contact that may be forced by the offensive player, man, you can't call that. Especially in a game where you've already kind of like ramped up the impact of like fouling out.
Yes.
Is going to have on the game. So just a real, I mean, I can't say I'm surprised because every game at Breslin is like this. Where
yeah. But, you know, but this was an especially, I mean, Ted Valentine, Terry Weimer, Robert Riley. Thanks for almost screwing this up, guys.
Retire, Teddy. Retire.
Yeah. Don't just threaten to do it. Please, by all means, do it.
Just a disaster.
I mean, the call. First of all, the thing he did where he turns his back on Joel Berry,
unbelievably
North Carolina. That is
firing offense.
I'm shocked he was officiating games this week, to be honest.
Honestly, that's the that should be the equivalent of Woody punching a Clemson player.
Yeah, like, where it's just like, you know what, it's
career,
like,
over.
You're
disrespecting the game.
You're clearly doing this to be part of the show.
Yeah,
and at that point, I mean, I know that Ted Valentine does have a almost shocking amount of respect around college basketball for being a decent official. I mean, and there are things that he does. Oh, well, as an official in terms of, and unfortunately, this was the complete opposite of it. What he's praised for a lot of the time is the amount that he communicates with the players on the court. And,
right.
And so it says a lot that he then also turned his back on a player for complaining about a terrible call, a terrible call.
A terrible missed call.
First of all, to disrespect another person like that, and then to show up a college player on the court that way, to fail to do your job, and then to come out the next week and call a game like this where he's making calls from out of position that aren't there, because he had a couple of the Ted Valentine cross court specials.
Well, I don't know if he was, like, there were two entry passes that Michigan successfully contested that were called fouls, one on Wagner, one on Livers.
And at least one of those Ted Valentine is making that call from out by the coach's box.
Yeah.
Like the half court fringe of the coach's box. And, that's not his call.
No.
And there's no way he could have seen the contact, and he loves running in there and making a signal, man.
Yep. We should talk a little bit about the Purdue game as well.
We should. And we shouldn't end on a refs note either. Because this has been an incredibly positive week of basketball.
Yeah. So, I mean, Michigan loses to Purdue by 1 point at home when Purdue shoots 57% on threes that I thought were largely unguardable.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be a couple that get through your defense because you're rotating or you had to help. But
the way they were, I mean, as Dan Dockage was saying throughout the game, they were sprinting off of screens in a way that just, I mean, if they're going to hit those shots, you just got to tip your cap.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, my antipathy for Michigan State, I feel like the exact opposite for Purdue.
Yeah.
Like, our games against them are fun. They're like, Painter is not a histrionics kind of guy.
Not only that, but he is an awesome interview. Like, that guy will get in there after the game and tell you exactly why things went the way they did. Like, I have loved covering Michigan-Purdue games the last couple of years to just not only watch the, like, chess match between the two coaches, but to then hear them talk about it afterwards. Yeah. It's awesome.
Well, in this game, like, he's switching everything.
Yes. They're switching 1 through 5. And John Beilein says, like, that takes, like, three, like, he didn't expect that. That takes 3 days of Beilein game planning and throws a lot of it out the window, and he just has to adjust. Beilein does a great job of adjusting in this game, but that threw Michigan off early.
Yeah, and eventually it's just like, well, Xavier Simpson is going to pull up in front of a 7'2 guy who's 5 feet off of him and cans a couple threes. That's what kind of gets Michigan back to parity.
Hits some floaters over Isaac Haas.
Yeah, I mean,
like, bam.
He's getting into, like, circus shot territory where every once in a while he just, like, does something that is like, okay, well, if the NBA doesn't work out, you can be a globetrotter.
Yeah.
so that you've got that going for you.
Yeah, I mean, like, it, obviously Simpson being able to create shots for himself the way that he did is a massive development. And also, he's now, turnovers were a problem for him earlier this year and last year, and now he's on a stretch where he was a little turnover prone in the Illinois game, but other than that, 7 assists, no turnovers against Iowa. 5 assists, 1 turnover against Purdue. 5 assists, no turnovers against Michigan State. He is distributing the ball really well. He is now. I hadn't checked his synergy page in a while, and
this is not a real stat.
I pulled it up today, and you're not.
You told me this, and I'm like, I don't believe that.
This. So Xavier Simpson has used 182 possessions that have ended in either a shot or an assist. On those plays, he grades out in the 99th percentile in the country.
That's, I don't believe you.
And
what do you, I mean, like, if you assist on a basket, it's obviously a basket, though. Like,
yeah, so that raises it up. But, like, that, what that basically means is his shots are very efficient, and even more so, especially with this, the shots that he creates are tremendously efficient and in terms of...
So he's setting up a lot of knockdown threes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, almost half of his assists are on threes. So Michigan's getting almost 2.5 points per assist from Xavier Simpson. And that is a lot more than most guys.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like most guys do not get half their assists on kickouts to threes. Huh. This does apply to most players, but that is actually skewed quite a bit by transition play, where he gets a lot more of his assists on two-pointers, but in the half court.
We forgot to talk about that in the Michigan State game.
Yeah, Michigan's transition defense was unbelievably good.
Because one thing that Michigan State has been doing for the past 2 or 3 years that has drives me crazy is they'll run off Michigan makes.
Yes.
And they'll get like 6 to 8 pretty easy points a game, maybe even 10 sometimes.
Yeah.
Just running off Michigan makes. And
that's dead. It's never happened.
That went out the window. We just didn't see Michigan State get basically any transition offense at all.
Yeah. Would you like to hear a stat?
I'll believe this one, I think.
Michigan per synergy is the best transition defensive team in the country. They are giving up 0.744 points per possession on transition,
what?
Which is obscene. And not only that, they have an incredibly low percent, only 11.6% of opponent possessions even come in transition. Michigan gives up very few possessions in transition because they're not crashing the offense. You know, they're not a team that crashes the offensive
board. Or turns the ball over.
Yeah, so that they get back, they're in position, but that hasn't always translated to good transition defense in the past. Right now, what they're doing, I mean, there were a few Michigan State possessions on runouts that I was sure was going to end in dunks, and instead they had to pull out and go into a full 30-second possession. And that's huge.
And now it makes more sense from a make the game a good win basketball sense, because their defense in the half court is now good.
Yes.
So like getting other teams in the half court has more reward.
Yeah. And I mean, there's always a reward in keeping a team out of a transition possession, but it wasn't necessarily as great in the past as it is now.
Yes, thank you. That is what I was trying to communicate. And that could have been the difference in the game. Like, Michigan is tooth and nail with this team until a couple minutes left when they get it up to like 6 points and then 8 points. And how many Michigan State possessions would have been easy twos a couple of years ago? Probably enough to make that, you know, at least tight.
Yeah. To be honest, I think it's probably enough to turn the tide of that game.
Yeah.
Especially since it was pretty darn close. And I mean, that never got above 10 points either way until the final 2 minutes.
Never got by 5 points. Michigan had like a 5 point lead a couple times, and the whole game was just.
It was played entirely in the sphincter squeezing zone. That was a taut affair.
Yes.
But I mean, a heck of a basketball game, too.
Except for the.
You know, except for all the whistles. But it says a lot about the ability of both of these teams that game managed to be quite fun despite that.
And one last thing about the Purdue game, it was a foul on Mo at the end.
It was. It absolutely was.
There was one earlier that was not, where he wasn't reaching around and he got a legitimate, like, poke.
Yeah, and I do think... there is a fair criticism of Beilein there, which is I would have liked to see Teske in on that possession.
Yeah.
Defending Haas in the post. So something to think about for future, you know, last defensive possession of the game type situations. Yeah. But, you know, them's the breaks, I guess. And Beilein's done a masterful job this season again. So that minor quibble of what has been so far. Like I think he has done we saw with the Livers addition to the starting lineup yesterday. He seems to be, and with how he managed the point guard situation too, he seems to be pulling all the right strings at the right time.
Yeah, and he's we kind of expect this at this point where like, okay, there's some early struggles, especially with younger teams, but there is a point at which things click. And clearly that has occurred because, you know, they play the two best teams in the Big Ten, one on the road in a very adverse foul situation, one where Purdue is playing out of its mind.
Yeah, and also the officials are kind of calling it like it's not a home game. we'll get to that later, or never.
Yeah, we've expressed our...
Yeah, we've quibbled enough.
They're not quibbles. They're great, throbbing, anger touchstones.
True.
I'm a normal person who says normal things. But I think they played about as well as you could ask them to play. And now, you know, we're kind of seeing it pop up on all the ranking systems. Like Michigan has cracked the top 20 on both Ken Pom and Bart Torvik's site.
Yeah, Torvik has them all the way up at 13th.
13th.
It's pretty good.
So this might be a year that ends up being a lot like last year.
Yeah. No, I've actually already started making some Big Ten tournament plans, and I was not necessarily planning to do that.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking about, okay, the league's awful. Michigan's probably going to have a pretty good record, but their resume is not going to have the kind of like schedule depth that you need to get a real good seed.
Yeah, no, Michigan is going to be like at this rate, the six or seven seed right now that the Torvik's got him projected as the top seventh seed. And with the schedule from here on out, unless Michigan beats Purdue or goes on Big Ten title run, or puts up just an enormously gaudy record, they probably don't have much upward mobility beyond a six seed. It's just tough with how crappy the Big Ten is this year.
Yeah, and so when...
But they're going to be the six or seven that absolutely no one wants to face.
Right, exactly. Like, you're going to see... The team that draws Michigan in the tournament be like,
Yeah, they're gonna be saying words that we're trying not to say on this podcast.
Well, or they get cut out of our podcast.
Yes.
Repeatedly.
Indeed. Thanks, David.
Yeah, doing us a solid.
Yeah.
Before we take a break, though, we did want to pump Ace's fundraiser again, which is now in serious self-mutilation territory to your general aesthetic.
I in fact strongly suspect by the time you hear this podcast, I will be locked into getting a tattoo
of Nick Ward collapsed on the ground.
You know, we'll see. So you know, a couple things about that, which is first of all, when I was writing on Monday, I was really in a not very good place, as probably came through in the writing a little bit, and I know I haven't been totally open with that for probably obvious reasons, but to be able to have this platform and to be comfortable with a community where I could feel comfortable getting that out there and really opening up and being honest, because that was not easy.
Sure.
It was freeing in a way that I honestly didn't expect, because when I sat down to write, it was almost just because I just wanted to get something out and I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this, and things really started moving quickly, and the response as well as the Unrest documentary by Jen Bray, which I hope you all will consider watching on PBS. It's still streaming for free.
And you're watching a lot of PBS documentaries these days.
Yeah, you know, it's part of my jam.
We were slacking, and I misidentified Grover Cleveland as James Garfield.
James Garfield, and yeah.
And Ace was like, no, I watched a PBS documentary about this, and I was like, that is the most MGO blog statement of all time.
Yeah.
Like, well, actually, someone based on a PBS documentary. Yeah, that's on brand.
Yeah, that was very on brand.
But anyway, back to your...
So the Unrest documentary has done an incredible thing, which has really inspired not just me, but a lot of people with CFS to open up and tell their stories. And it really is, I think, an important part of not only raising awareness and raising very needed research money, because this has been a long, long overlooked illness, and something that the CDC, I won't get into it too much, has done a horrible job of really managing.
Yeah, I think we had a conversation years back where you were mentioning that people just think it's bullshit.
Yeah, there was the CDC certainly did not help here. There is still a serious stigma that, and I think this is also in large part because most of the people who suffer from this are women. There is a serious stigma that it is all in your head, and you just gotta get up and do something,
right?
And a lot of doctors will treat it the same way, and in doing so, really do serious harm to their patients, especially since a lot of these patients, they don't know what they have. I mean, you know, this right. is not an illness that a lot of doctors are going to know to diagnose, let alone treat. So to be able to get this out there, and I also want to shout out, I hope I'm not butchering your name, but Brian Sciazza, who's an Islanders fan of from New York. I don't even know how I don't even remember how I stumbled upon his fundraiser, but that was what inspired me to use the CrowdRaise site and point it in the direction of the Solve ME/CFS campaign. And I've now made this connection with somebody that I suspect will go on for a long time, and that to be able to connect with the people that I have this week has been just remarkably touching. And I've heard from a lot of people I haven't heard from a long time, heard from friends and family and strangers, and heard a lot of stories from people who have dealt with either this issue or similar issues, or they're taking care of somebody who has. And I want to thank everybody who's reached out, because it has really carried me through from a very bad place on Monday to a very good place this week. So, and I also am apparently going to be getting a tattoo. So you should. I think the way I'm going to set it up, because I do want to actually say something about that, because it wasn't, you know, I am following the footsteps of Spencer Hall here a little bit.
Yeah.
But that there was a reason to do it beyond trying to get people to send money in. And I'm very glad that it helped spur some people to help send money. I have received some comments of people going, get the tat. And so I'm glad that may have spurred something.
But have you thought about it being my face?
I don't know if I could ever.
The photobomb shirt.
I don't know if I could ever sit in the same room with you again and record this podcast if it happened. I don't think I could ever look you in the eye.
Come on.
But I think, you know, one of the things that is most difficult to deal with CFS is just not having agency over your own body.
Sure.
And just feeling a loss of control. So for me, being able to turn this illness into something where now I'm very much taking agency over my body in some way by permanently putting something on.
Yeah.
I think there's something there that's quite fitting, given this whole thing. And so I'm already planning to get a tattoo of my dad's painting. And then
could have been my face.
And then, but I also,
Dave deeply disapproves.
I'll be getting two tattoos, because I was going to get the one of my dad's painting no matter what, because that carries a deep meaning to me. And then I think what I want to do is, I do want the tattoo to be Michigan related in some way, and even MGO blog related in some way, because this community means a lot to me, and I really don't have an idea of what that would be. I'm curious for submissions, so
I submitted something. I was rejected.
I want to open it up to people who want to submit sketches or ideas or whatever, and I do want to pick it myself.
Okay, that's fine.
But
just keep it in the back of your mind.
But
in case.
But I'm excited to see what comes of this.
All right.
And again, I cannot possibly thank everybody enough for the just incredible outpouring of support and generosity this week.
Yeah, we have a money cannon, and it's good to use it.
Well, you've provided quite a platform.
I just kind of yell things on the internet and people listen for some reason. All right, we got to get to a break, and we're gonna we have a kind of a douchey top five.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
The music, the sound, the ambiance of a college football game never more pronounced than here in this big, big old oval called Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor. But now the greeting for the Wolverines at home.
Kind of moment has to have deep roots, and it does. 117 years of growth, 764 wins, most by any Division 1A team. This is Michigan. Here come the Wolverines. It's in college football as the Michigan Wolverines come out of that little tunnel and jump up and touch the Go Blue sign and the banner roaring in the crowd of 100,000 plus and the blue skies of late September. Pretty good setting for what we're about to see.
We forgot to thank our sponsors because we were just so into Keith Jackson and beating Michigan State. So we'll do that now. Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.16, 40 minutes in or so. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor downtown, which narrowly missed having just 9 conference rooms. But
it was close.
It was so close. Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a Lantana thing that fed into our lists.
Well, oh, no. It's just part of my top 5 answer is tied into it. It's not part of the... Yeah.
All right. Well, will that suffice to be the read then, or are we?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think we might have to do a real read here.
Oh, here goes nothing. Lantana's going to have a booth at Myers Beer Week in Grand Rapids. If you live in Grand Rapids, I'm so sorry about your sports talk radio situation. we've been asked to see if there are any beers that go with various Lantana flavors. And hummus and beer is, of course, a classic combination.
Extremely.
Which has been passed down from ancient times.
Yeah.
I will say the Dillon cucumber one might be good for a summery day with kind of a late light lager or a saison.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like some of the... generally, when I'm like snacking, I tend to like a hoppier beer. So I would tend to pair a lot of those with an IPA.
IPAs
I know you hate them, but
well, sour IPA, that's good. That sounds like a good beer.
But you know, especially you know maybe something that's made with citra hops, where you get a little bit of that citrus flavor too.
Citra hops are nice. Yeah.
So
maybe the apricot.
Yeah. Apricot. Absolutely.
We decided that both of them are correct. But
the apricot
British.
And apricot, you just do it British style.
Yeah, because I'm classy like that.
Indeed.
Anyway, our top 5 list is things that were supposed to get better but didn't. And it should be fun. Ace, your number 5.
Our Lantana hummus reads. I told you. I had a good answer for that one.
Also,
that probably would be number 1, but I wanted to fire that one off first.
That's... I cannot deny that at all. But people are always like,
people respond to our terrible ad reads,
tweeting at me, be like, "Yeah, I've discovered this hummus and I actually like it. And now I have brand loyalty to it." And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing about this blog is that people are like, "Yeah, that Lantana stuff, I gotta try that. It's good, but we're so bad at communicating that." I just wanted to get this one out of the way too. It's Michigan football from 2007 to 2015.
Hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Pretty much self-explanatory.
Indeed.
Ace, your number four.
Along those very same lines, another one I wanted to get out of the way quickly. Michigan's offensive line, 2012 to present.
This was supposed to be like wicked burns, but they're like self-applied.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. Well,
you know, that happens sometimes with us. Probably more often than we care to say.
My number four is cartoons.
Interesting.
Well, you know, you have to. You have a small child, and he's getting up to the point where he can go watch, because he wants to watch something.
So this is more about your introduction into the world of children's cartoons.
Well, we're trying to like keep it at least tolerable. So like last night, my wife put on Finding Dory, which is the sequel to Finding Nemo, and it had Ellen as the titular Dory, and mm-hmm. I was like, not really feeling that. And she also like checked out The Last Unicorn from the library,
mm-hmm.
Which remains this weird, badass, insane cartoon with like a literal harpy in it. And there's like a woman who's like, why weren't you here when I was new? And I was like, damn, lady. And the contrast between, you know, the kind of like Pixar-y, I mean, there's ups and downs. Like Up was obviously in a class by itself, yeah. But you know, you're just looking at children's programming, and it's still, despite like the kind of trend towards tolerable stuff with toys, the most, I mean, you're going to be watching like Peppa Pig and like What's Her Face with the monkey,
mm-hmm.
Dora the Explorer, that's her
sure
name. And it's just like
give me Sesame Street.
Well, I ask him, I'm like, do you want to watch a Star Trek? And sometimes he's like, yeah, I'm Star Trek. And I'm like, yes. You just put on a TNG and just cool, chill out for about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that we like just put him in front of the television 24 hours a day. It's like he gets like an hour, maybe two.
Yeah.
Depending. But yeah, cartoons are still stuck in a rut because children are not adults. Newsflash.
That might be a difficult problem to solve. I'm going to be honest. It might stay stuck in that rut.
Ace, you're number three.
The Lions forever and ever.
Good
and
God.
Ever.
Yeah, but that's not. Nobody expects them to get better.
You'd be shocked at how many people thought this might be the year.
The year for what?
I don't know. Maybe a playoff win for the first time since I was literally 3 years old.
I mean, if you think the Lions are going to get better, that's like on you, man.
That's true. This wasn't necessarily my thought, but yeah, yeah.
It's like, are the Browns going to be good this year? Maybe. No, they're not going to be good. My number three is also a self-own. It is Jurgen Klinsmann. This better have a good payoff.
Yep.
Everybody is thinking right now instead of just depressing sports things. But yeah, the U.S. got out of the group, but they were absolutely bombed in all of their games, vastly outshot. Going to the Gold Cup a couple years later, get outshot by Haiti in a game they should have lost. And things continued on from there. This could extend to U.S. soccer in general, obviously, because Bruce Arena did not do anything sane in his last game. All right. My last two are good.
Good.
Ace, you're number two.
My ability to resist talking about embarrassing things on the internet.
Yeah. You're just like...
It has not improved.
Nipples and I got problems and...
There's just, yeah.
You got problems. I'm a very sensitive, kind of new agey guy.
Yeah, I got, no, but I mean, I can acknowledge that. I got some problems, man.
That's true.
I'm out there. But,
you're
I didn't expect that I would still be this somewhat open book about things,
man.
But hey.
If I told people all the stuff that you tell people, man. There'd be some awards
there might
out.
Be, people might be overwhelmed by this podcast.
I've never done anything illegal. I mean, very illegal. I've never done anything very illegal.
It's a good line to draw.
My number two is ribs after cooking them for 3 hours. So you see people, and it's like, oh, I smoked these ribs for 75 hours. And I'm like, you could have just braised them. Just braise your ribs, people. It's connective tissue. It wants to be braised. You braise your ribs, and then you finish them. You can finish them on the grill. You can finish them in the broiler. It's fine. If you want some smoke flavor, there's something called liquid smoke. Just put it in there. Smoked ribs that have been on the smoker for 75 hours, not as good as braised ribs.
You're just finding ways to needle the South.
I didn't say anything about that.
But that's who's going to be.
I will note that bourbon isn't on my list because it does get better, and then it becomes a man's drink, which is called whiskey. That's your fault. You brought up the South, and I was like, oh, I got a hot take about this.
Oh yeah, and then you just kicked my go to liquor right between the legs.
I mean, bourbon's fine, but it is kiddie whiskey. It is. It's like literally.
I know. It's
child
it's,
whiskey.
It's sweeter whiskey.
It's also like whiskey's like, oh, I'm 12, I'm 15, I'm 22, and bourbon's like, I'm 3.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assessment. It's just in the harshest possible way to put it.
Well, it's not on my list because this is brown liquor is not on my list for good reasons, but yes. Ribs are.
Yeah.
Because you want to break that beautiful connective tissue down and then just kind of sear it at the end. Not sear it necessarily, but you want to crisp it up, maybe get a little char on there. Mm-hmm. And smoking it is not worth that time and effort. If you're a professional, maybe.
Yeah.
If you're a home cook, just braise your freaking ribs. Ace, your number one.
Instant replay in sports and pretty much all
forms. Oh, my God. Yes. Good God. You'd think that 75 years after the introduction of replay, they'd be able to get something right in less than 75 minutes.
Yes, and in both, it's like somewhat ruined games that I've watched this week in both basketball and football.
Yeah.
The review at the end of the Purdue game obviously went against the entire spirit of the game of basketball. And also took an interminably long time to come to the wrong conclusion.
It was literally seven and a half minutes.
And what was annoying was by the way that instant replay works, that was probably the right call technically by literally two frames.
It's still falls into like this is not.
But that's why I mean instant replay is broken. And that's what I'm trying to say here is instant replay is broken in both basketball and football. As somebody brought up in the comments after the Purdue game, it's broken in baseball too because you get like with the end of the Purdue game out of bounds play, you get these like when you slide onto a base, your foot's gonna bounce off of it at some point, yeah. And they've never called the guys out for that because like you can't see it. It's like a two frames,
yeah.
But now like guys are getting called out stealing bases that for 150 years would have been a steal. But because they can slow it down and figure out that the guy's glove was on a player for the exact right millisecond,
I don't
that he's out.
I didn't know that they could review that in baseball. That's how much baseball I watch.
Yeah, I mean, this was a very recent development in baseball. Yeah.
My number one is every Michigan State NBA prospect who comes back for another year.
This was the whole reason.
The whole reason for the list.
we accidentally turned it depressing for a while.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to go that way, but this is why we did this. It was petty, and we don't regret it in any way whatsoever.
We don't regret it at all, because Miles Bridges,
Bridges got petty after the game.
Laid an egg against Michigan.
I mean, he laid a 19-point egg, but they lost. So, you know, he turned the ball over four times.
Did. He was not a very efficient offensive player.
No.
And then he's like talking about how embarrassing it is to get out-toughed by Michigan. Hey, buddy.
Well, a program that does not focus on toughness, okay. As I like to point out.
A program, like what? Like what
is that?
What exactly? Like you just like punch each other in the balls of practice? Is that like, I bet they do. I bet it's like there's Rochambeau period.
Yep. You've just discovered the secret to Izzo's incredible rebounding.
That's why
not that crazy rebounding drill that they do. It's actually just Rochambeau.
He's so short that he probably has to headbutt his players to Rochambeau them. I mean, I guess it's just an option.
You know, yeah.
This is a good part of the podcast.
This is definitely where we expected this to go.
Yeah,
too.
Just Izzo flinging his forehead into the...
Poor Jaren Jackson, just at the exact right height for that to happen.
Oh, man. But, like, okay.
David shaking his
head. Know, I know what Michigan practice is. It is called basketball. And that's why John Beilein's biggest problem as a coach is he outdevelops his recruiting.
Yes.
So if you want to be DJ Wilson and come from absolutely nowhere to become a first-round NBA draft prospect.
Yes.
Then you should go to Michigan. Brandon Johns made a good decision. Miles Bridges, you know, I'm not going to say that going to Michigan State was a bad decision because, you know, maybe someone's helping you out because you went to Michigan State. What I am saying is once you can get that cheddar yourself, go get it because you're not going to get better by Rochambeau and Tom Izzo. Being Rochambeau'd by Tom Izzo.
Yeah, no, it's not helping. He should have left after a year.
His draft stock is dropping just like every NBA-ready Michigan State player. But somehow this dude wheedles these dudes back into school. I don't know. Some Stockholm Syndrome stuff going on there.
Yeah, especially after the Rochambeau, you think they'd really want to get out.
Like, Pop is just not going to harm my genitals in the proper way.
Yeah,
like...
Yeah,
you're just...
I was going to keep saying things, but I don't know what they were going to be. I think
we're done talking about this. Practice toughness. Do you know what happened to Michigan last year after they almost died in a plane crash? Do you know what happened?
I believe they won 4 games in 4 days, one of them while wearing their practice uniforms.
Right. So who's tough? Miles Bridges. I don't know. I do know who should have gone to the NBA because you're just getting worse. And getting hit in the balls a lot.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Williams' grandmother could have scored that one.
So Michigan showed you a little razzle-dazzle stuff.
Four things that Charles Woodson can do.
That thump you just heard, that was Bo Schembechler fainting. Bo wouldn't leave that play. But you know, Prater, and the last time Ryan Greasy ran that far, his dad was chasing him with a stick.
With the oxygen.
Frank Beckman, who is the broadcaster for the Michigan team, came in before the game and said, "What do you think?" And I said what I thought. And now I've decided I don't know a damn thing about anything.
I promised him. Whoa, Nelly.
Okay, so we've literally kicked Ace off of Ace's Hockey Podcast. So we can introduce Dave, who watches and charts the games, which is kind of unfortunate because I enjoyed needling Ace about In fact, he doesn't watch hockey.
I mean, we have a third headset, I think.
But what's the point? Ace is just nodding. He's like, yeah, that's fair. So Michigan sweeps Minnesota this weekend, and you mentioned to me off the air that now they're 16th in the pairwise?
Tied for 15th with, ironically, Minnesota, who they've beaten three times.
That's because they're 500.
Yes, they are 10-2, I believe.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned that basically every one of their losses is to a top 20 team.
8 of their 10 losses have come against teams that are about top 20. I think Wisconsin may have dropped a spot or two, so maybe it's top 25 now.
Sure.
But any loss that they have, aside from that one stomping in East Lansing and then the one giveaway against Ferris in the beginning of the year, has come against a team that has an outside shot at the tournament.
So their schedule strength must be just kind of off the charts at this point.
Well, the Big Ten is a lot better.
Yeah, and, I mean add Notre Dame.
So they lost to Clarkson, remember, the second game of the year?
Yeah.
People probably don't remember. They got shut out, I believe. Clarkson's like 2.
Really?
Yeah. Ohio State's like 5. Notre Dame's 1. Like, Penn State's a top maybe 10, 12 team. Minnesota's still right around where they're at. They lost to Bowling Green in a game that took place almost during Michigan's bowl game. Yeah. Bowling Green's about where they are in RPI.
Because I honestly hadn't looked at the pairwise, and I was just thinking that there's no earthly way that they're going to be even on the bubble.
So they keep dropping games throughout the first half of the season. You know, they'll tie someone and lose, or they'll, you know, lose in overtime and lose or something. And they never really fell below 30th, I don't think, just because of things like that. Probably that Clarkson and then the Ohio State being good helps in that sense.
Well,
Notre Dame.
When you do get wins over good teams, you get like a specific bump.
Right.
In pairwise, although they haven't actually done that to anyone except like Minnesota.
Right. Who is also close to 500. I believe they're like 13-12 and something.
Yeah.
And they've beaten them 3 times now.
So we're getting like an old WCHA pairwise bump here.
Yeah. One of my takeaways from this weekend is I don't think Minnesota's that good.
Well, yeah, I mean
they don't score. Like, if you look at, like, Minnesota's always been one of those, like, scoring teams that will give some pucks away, but then has all these NHL draft prospects that come in and score goals. They don't really have that. They don't really score goals. They had 2 shots in the third period last night.
Yeah, that was bonkers. I mean, and that's on Olympic ice.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen Michigan being able to, like, shut down Minnesota at Minnesota.
So I definitely think Michigan's defense is getting a little bit better. I don't know that it's getting a ton better, but I think part of that definitely is quality of competition. Because if you also look at Notre Dame, they don't have a great offense either. They win because their goaltending numbers are fantastic and their defense is good enough. But the last 4 games I wrote a little bit this weekend about how Michigan's put together a few good defensive performances. And I do think that they have, and people I've talked to have said, you know, this player's gotten better, and there's not the egregious turnovers that we've been known to be seeing. But I also think that they're not playing top-notch offenses either, at least the last couple of weeks.
I mean, you're not going to find a whole lot of teams in the NCAA that have more raw talent than Minnesota.
Maybe this year. I mean, they have that Mittelstedt kid, but beyond that,
they have 13 draft picks, and I know all their defensemen are drafted, but they're still, like, it's kind of like Michigan, where, like, I feel like Michigan doesn't have a ton of offensive talent, but they have a lot of draft picks, so there's some bottom there that they are clearly clearing. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you entirely about the fact that they haven't been going up against teams that are really slick offensive units, but I mean, compared to last year when it didn't matter who they were playing, Michigan could go up 10 goals.
Right, and that's why I will say that I think it's getting better, because the things that Michigan can control more on defense, I think they are to an extent. Like, they're not giving up as many of those egregious odd man rushes. They're not just giving the puck away in the middle of the ice like they used to.
Well,
they're kind of cutting down on their own mistakes.
The broadcast on Saturday was really interesting because, you know, it's the third period, Michigan's up 3-1, and Minnesota has failed to get probably 6 point blank one timers on net.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is just kind of like confirmation bias on the announcer's part, and maybe this game seems a lot different if like 2 or 3 of those go in. And when those passes were made, I was like, that's a goal. That's also a goal. This is a goal. And none of them went in.
And that was kind of like, you know, you were tweeting a little bit about it, and I was writing some things down too, last night. But I think that also builds into the fact that maybe Minnesota doesn't have those snipers that they used to. They have guys they're putting in places,
yeah.
But their power play was maybe worse than Michigan's penalty kill, and Michigan is down to like 75% on a penalty kill.
Special teams are terrible.
But Minnesota hadn't scored a power play goal
since December 2nd, I think
something
they said.
Like that, and they got two this weekend, yeah. And I think their percentage was around scoring at 13% on the power play, which is
yeah, those numbers they put up were pretty ugly.
Right.
But as I was saying about the announcers, Ben Clymer is their color guy. He played at Minnesota, played in the NHL, is pretty good, knows what he's talking about. He was just kind of marveling at how disciplined and organized Michigan was. And he was pointing out specific hockey-talky things that like you might hear from a coach. So he was really kind of delving into the various ways in which Michigan is a very disciplined defensive system right now. And nobody would have said that about Michigan last year.
Or right.
Thought about saying that.
Well, and that's kind of what we hoped, is that I don't think that coming into this year we thought, oh, they're going to get this influx of talent and be better. But they have some drafted defensemen, and they bring in Quinn Hughes. So if they can reorganize their defensive system and teach people where to play, knock it out of position, know where to be based on where your attackers are coming from and stuff, they can be maybe formidable defensively.
Yeah, and you know, I think that maybe they're spending so much time just trying to get that system in place that that's why you're seeing the special teams be a little bit disappointing, or very disappointing, because like they're probably working so hard on getting Michigan back to a good 5-on-5 team that maybe they're neglecting that a little bit. And maybe at this point in the season, they'll be able to spend some more time on it because the system seems to be in place and working fairly well.
Yeah, and that's why I think that this upcoming weekend is going to be big, is because Penn State has been probably one of the pushers of high Corsi numbers over the past few years, and they're coming into Yost. And is Michigan going to be able to stay defensively sound when Penn State is going to come up the ice and they want to shoot from everywhere? They want to shoot the puck. They want to control it. And that's what Michigan is trying to do. I mean, you look at Pearson, and that's what he did at Tech. And Michigan's Corsi numbers have been infinitely better this year. And if you look at Tech, they've dropped off somewhat significantly. So if they can hold their own against a team that's going to want to control the puck, I think that's going to tell you what a little bit more, or at least add to the pile of evidence of what their defensive system wants to be like.
Well, and it's also going to go a long way towards whether Michigan can actually take this schedule that they've been handed and turn it into a tourney bid, which I am frankly shocked that they're in the conversation, but here they are. And that's where we hope that they would be, I think, at this point in Mel's first year. And because they have such a tough schedule, the record has been disappointing. But the way they've played, like, I watched both those Notre Dame games, and, I mean, Michigan went toe-to-toe with that team. And that team is almost undefeated on the season. And I didn't feel like I was watching a game where Notre Dame was clearly better. Opportunities were really hard to come by for both teams, and the shots were pretty close to parity. And it felt like I was watching two good hockey teams, good organized, well-coached hockey teams that didn't have a ton of offensive talent. But the difference between Michigan and Notre Dame it's not a huge gap this year.
I don't know if there is one, but it goes back to what we were talking about before. Notre Dame had, I think, 3 power play goals on the weekend. Michigan had 0. Notre Dame was able to take advantage of their set plays on power play and win the game there, and Michigan couldn't. And that's basically what the difference in those games were, aside from maybe Morris just flat out being everywhere the puck was being shot.
Yeah, and Michigan hit a couple posts. Like, there was a Slaker ring-a-ding. Is that something people say? Probably.
I've never said that, but you've maybe been around hockey a little more than I have.
That is not a fact. But, I mean, Michigan seems to be in a pretty good place for Mel's first year, and hopefully they can get it done. Not having Lockwood for maybe the season is a real downer, though, because they cannot afford to lose a guy that a dynamic at forward.
The other thing is, if you look at Michigan's schedule going forward, they have to go to Ohio State in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier.
But that's it. Like,
what?
No, I mean, Wisconsin comes to town. Penn State comes to town.
They have another series with Notre Dame.
Home and home.
But that's...
It is, but they just played them to what, I mean, not on the scoreboard, but they played them to a draw.
That's true.
And that's, I mean, if they win one of those games, they get a little bit of luck or whatever in one of those games, I mean, that's a huge win.
It is.
So they have games at Yost where they have, I thought, played at least as good, if not better in general. And then they finish with Arizona State, which could be an RPI attacker. But
well, so college hockey RPI has made a change that basketball should, where you can't win a game and have that hurt your RPI, which is brilliant. And it incenses me that basketball hasn't made that same fix. So you can lose that game, and then it's a big problem. But if you beat a bad team, it's not going to hurt you. So Michigan has an opportunity here because they're playing so many top 20 teams, and hockey's RPI is slanted to reward that. So you get bonus points for beating top 20 teams, and if you can get that Notre Dame dub, then it's really, really worth playing them. So
or even Ohio State, they go to, if they can go down and get a split in Columbus, yeah, which is might be asking a ton, especially with the way that the first series went, or that, you know, they host Penn State, who they probably could have won both games last time, if you remember correctly, because they had a lead, gave it away in the last 60 seconds. I mean, they've done that two or three times. Mm-hmm. So you look at some of these losses, and no, they're not a great team because the results happened. But you look at what, if they could have held on to a couple of those games in 120 seconds or whatever, I mean, they could be solidly in the tournament right now, which does not sound like something we would have said, you know, pre-Christmas. Hopefully they can keep it going.
Hopefully they can keep it going, and they'll play Penn State at Yost this weekend, so get your tickets, get in there, and hopefully it'll be another couple wins and maybe a at-large spot in the pairwise, which, hey, not bad.
Not bad for the first year, especially after that first half.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am a Sandbender along with Brian Cook. First of all, I want to once again thank everybody for what they've done with the fundraiser, and I also want to send out my heartfelt best wishes to Nick Ward's ankles.
It's always tough losing someone who's important to you, something that's important to you, so we'd like to leave you with taps in honor of Keith Jackson and also Nick Ward's ankles.